The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. I'm going to turn the page basically on what happened in Game 5 with the Suns and Clippers. I'm not going to avoid it, but this is predictable. And this goes back to the series is pretty even, if not for a miraculous of miraculous plays that will go down in Valley history. The Suns would be the ones looking up right now and be the ones facing the elimination. They would be. So it's that close between these two teams. And there's some other things I want to get to today because I do feel as though there is, yeah, everybody is wound up about the Suns, and that's going to be easy for me to go through and talk through today. But there are some other things that I feel like I don't want them to get lost in the shuffle, and there's some things here in town that have just gotten lost in the shuffle. And so I want to get into those today. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Needed a show like today where I could just talk. I told producer Steve we're fine with guests. I'm going to have something with Michael Fabiano because some have asked about the fantasy side. I'll have that later on in the hour. That's fine. But let's focus on the Suns and then a few other things. So at the start of this series, there was the belief that without Chris Paul, and this isn't for everybody, this is my circles, and I've been in the Valley since 1993, so I'm not somebody who's been here all my life, but I've been here long enough, and, you know, as part of that whole Suns deal on broadcast before and after games and talking with fans, and fans are just wanting them to win games, and they don't really want a whole lot of breakdown and analysis. If a team doesn't win, it usually, in this day and age, you have to find people to blame. You can never just go down the path of the other team actually played better than the team that you're cheering for. Fandom has turned in this deal where if the team didn't win, it doesn't matter if it's youth sports, high school, college, you're going to blame the refs, you're going to blame the coach, you're going to blame the announcers, rather than just looking in the mirror and saying, no, this is us, this is on us. And the facts are facts. The Suns were not ready to play last night. They weren't, okay? And it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure that part of it out. As the game progressed, the Suns looked like a team that was hitting a bit of a playoff series wall. It happens. Do I think they're going to bounce back? Boy, I don't know. Paul George seemed to find his stroke. I don't know if I've ever heard Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson rip on a player more than they ripped on Paul George in the first half of Game 5. They were crushing him. They were just crushing him, and rightly so. And somewhere along the way, he decided, I'm going to be the one that looks like Devin Booker. I'm going to be the one that just goes after the Suns, and I'm going to be the one that shifts this series back to Los Angeles. When I see either Markieff or Marcus Morris do anything against the Suns, it makes me queasy. It just does, because their stay here was so just, gosh, what a mistake. And so the way the game started in the first quarter in Game 5, you're going to let Marcus Morris just go after you? And that had nothing to do with referees. That had nothing to do with announcers. It had everything to do with them making shots. It wasn't like the Suns just came out and weren't trying. I don't know if you saw this bit this morning. There was a tennis player over at Wimbledon. And the official ripped on him because he wasn't trying. Okay? That doesn't happen. Well, I shouldn't say it doesn't happen in the NBA. If it's a midweek January in a back-to-back game against a who-cares opponent, you're just not going to see them play as hard. Right now, teams are exerting a ton of mental and a ton of physical energy out there on the floor. And so last night, the Clippers were able to pull it together. They were able to muster it up. They were able to go after the Suns in a way that I haven't seen the Suns really struggle that badly as they did last night. It's just one of those games where you say, have they hit the wall? I don't know, but they've got to turn right back around and play game number 6 in L.A. And I had people that were critical of me on this deal when I had Charles on last week that I thought the Suns were in trouble. Even though they were down 2-1 in the series, they were a very once-in-a-lifetime value play away from being in a hole. And to think that this team is that much better, yeah, Kawhi Leonard's not playing. But if Paul George is going to go score 41-13 and get 6 assists, then the Clippers are going to win this series. They just are. I'm preparing to go to Game 7 Friday night. I think that's what's happening here. This is going to be, and the angst within the community, because it has been so long with nothing to pay attention to when it comes to the NBA team here in town, I just think fans don't know really how to react to this. Because what I saw last night, what I'm seeing today, is very little, hey, it's a loss, we're going to be able to move through. And a lot of, well, this happened and that happened and the refs this and the refs that. Jay Crowder poked Paul George in the eye. It happened, okay? But Patrick Beverley knocked Chris Paul down. And so, yeah, both those calls could go a direction that doesn't favor you and your fandom. People don't like it when I get into fans, but there's just times where both these teams are trying really hard to do something special. And the Clippers, to their credit, and Ty Lue's credit, they don't quit. It doesn't matter if Zubac is not on the floor. Why the ball is not able to get into DeAndre Ayton and play small, it's a smart, smart play on the Clippers' part. It's very smart. Go small, let's see what we can do. And then you have guys like DeMarcus Cousins, who looked like a load earlier in the series, and you know, you see him in Game 5, and it's, wow, he's actually being productive. He's actually giving them something. But the mental stress and strain, I think, for a young team, it's the other side of hard. They're trying to do something that they haven't done before, and you can go have Devin Booker get 31, you can have Chris Paul get 22, and you can feel very good about what the stat sheet said, but the better team that was playing as a team was the team that beat them, plain and simple. Had nothing to do with referees walking out on the floor saying, we're going to make sure that every call goes against the Suns, because it didn't. Do networks want to have the Clippers because of the LA market? Of course. It's going to be out there. I know that. I'm not going to defend that. Do they want a long series because it's extra revenue? Of course they do. There's a business side to all this. But that had nothing to do with the Clippers coming out in the first quarter and the Suns flat-footed and looking lethargic. They didn't look disinterested. I saw some of this just nonsense on social about, you know, Monty didn't have them ready to play and all that. It's Game 5 of a grind. It's a grind. So that's where I'm at on that. I'm going to turn the page and get ahead on from there into some other things around the team. So what happens in Game 6? Zubac come back? Does that make a big difference? Does the crowd have any impact? Crowd didn't have an impact in Game 5. Yeah, they were loud. Of course they were. The Clippers walked in and said, that's fine. We're going to jack stomp you by 14. So the whole thing about home court advantage, if it comes down to Game number 7, the Clippers have already shown they're resilient. They can go play in this space. So it's got to come down to execution by the players. Does Chris Paul look like the miles are wearing on him? I think for a night and watching them last night in Game 5, yeah, the mental fatigue, it's hard. You got to push through it. So there's that. Who can take out Mr. June? Reggie Jackson is not Mr. October, he's Mr. June. And who can be that guy? Because he gave them energy, he gave them enthusiasm, and then guys like Cousins and Morris were able to get through and make plays around the rim, make plays outside. Morris is stepping out, hitting jump shots, not just getting garbage points inside. So it was just a better team effort by the Clippers. And we look ahead now to Game number 6. And it's in Los Angeles. It is a space where winning on the other team's home court be that much sweeter. But I'm expecting a Game 7 at the arena on Friday night. That's just me. All right, on the other side, a few things. Torrey Lovello, wow. NIL, got to get into NIL because this will be a national story. And Aaron Rodgers. And that is that on the Suns. A little bit later, Michael Fabiano on Fantasy Football Fans have been asking for that. We'll bring back some of Michael's. You get ready for your fantasy teams too. So plenty to get to today. And yeah, the series is the most important thing in the Valley, but it's not the only thing going on in sports. Back with more after this timeout. By the way, some people in the break were asking, what about the number? So it's 215 is the over-under for game six. And it's pick'em at a lot of places. BetMGM has the Clippers as a one for the game. And I just feel like in a game number six, you know, 215, I got to believe that's going to come in the under. Unless one of these two teams just doesn't show up ready to go. But I would take the under on that. 215, yeah, I would take. And the Clippers is a one-point favorite. Yeah, it's basically pick'em, but because the Clippers are at home, the number is one. So there you go on that front. All right, a few things here. So Torrey Lovello last night had to leave Alex Young in the game to bat with the bases loaded. And the Diamondbacks lost another road game. They ended up getting hammered. And Torrey got just barbecued by the writers afterwards. I was watching the replay over on Bally's this morning of Torrey trying to weave and bob. And yeah, they've been so far off the radar screen, but some of you are still paying attention to this. And I actually am now wrapping my arms around the idea of we have to do something. And I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to look like, what it's going to entail, but we have to do something on the show that involves just how much this team blows. I'm not picking on them. But if we have to have a contest of what day will they break the all-time record for losses, or what will be the over-under on them getting 130 losses? You know, with the trade deadline coming up, what will that look like? And rather than sit here just every day and say that they stink, it's like when the Suns were awful in 95 and I lived in a van outside the arena and did that whole bit. I'm starting to formulate something in my head that we have to embrace what is going to happen to the baseball team. The easy thing to do in sports or in life is just if something's not going well, we just don't want to pay attention to it. No, I think we have to say, you know, let's try to pack the stadium the night that they set the all-time lead, because a lot of you would witness history. Who wouldn't want to be in the ballpark when they're going for loss number 130? Come on, guys, you can do it. And then when the trade deadline comes up and they don't trade certain guys and those guys are sentenced to being here, and yes, they're going to get paid. So I guess sentencing is too hard of a word, but how are those guys going to handle being here? And when do we start to see the tear down of 2021 and get to the, let's get to 2022. And because this year we're not going to get to 500, we're not even going to get to 400 the way it's going. But last night, Torrey's decision to let Alex Young bat with the bases loaded because he had tired arms down in the bullpen, that just doesn't fly, does it? You know, it just doesn't fly. And Torrey is, he's been second guessed and third guessed because the team has been so bad. And while you've been watching the Suns, this team has plummeted into an area that I have never seen in all my years of being here, ever. I've never seen a ball club this bad. And you can't say poor Diamondbacks. No, it's June. It's almost July 1. They're coming up to the halfway mark of the season. This bad boy is not 20 games left to go. This is, you got to go hammer the rock more and more and more. So that's on my mind today. The big story outside of the Suns is the NCAA and the NIL rules, name, image, and likeness, and that is going to start later this week. So I'll just give you practicalities here in the Valley. So let's say there's a football player at Arizona State. I'm not going to throw any names out there, especially with the investigation going on right now with the NCAA and Yahoo, and Doug Haller did a very good piece updating today over on The Athletic for those of you wanting to know about the scandal at Arizona State University. But this will just be in generic terms. So starting on Thursday, for the first time in the history of college sports, a player, not just football, any sport, it could be a girls volleyball player, it could be a wrestler, it could be a swimmer. If I own a dealership, if I own a Ford dealership, let's just say, and I come up to a player that I think would represent us very well. I can now say, do you want to drive this? Hey, do you want to come out to our dealership and I will pay you to sign autographs? That will start on Thursday. And there's going to be mistakes made. There's going to be, you're going to have people try to do their own clothing line. Already the quarterback at Wisconsin has his own logo that he has developed for Thursday. There's a basketball player at Iowa that's developed his own clothing line that he is going to be able to monetize starting Thursday. And what is going to happen, what I believe is going to happen in name, image, and likeness, is you're going to be able to take advantage of your name, your image, and your likeness. When you walk into a team shop, let's say over at ASU or at the U of A, and you see a jersey of a favorite player, and you're like, I want to buy that. I'll use Jake Plummer as an example when he was at Arizona State. There was Jake Plummer gear that could have been bought. Now, Jake Plummer would, if it were today and Jake were there, starting Thursday, Jake would get a percentage of his name being the backs on jerseys. He would be able to go out to, let's say, Monty's La Casa Vieja, like we used to do, even though Monty's no longer with us. But when Jake would come down and hang out with me at Monty's, he could say, you know what? They have the best steaks and the best Roman bread and the best spaghetti, which they did. And Michael Monty and Eddie Goiti could turn around and write a check to Jake Plummer and it wouldn't be a violation. That's where we're going with this. So if you're a business leader here in the Valley or wherever you're taking this in, I would advise you, if you want to be in the space of college sports, to start looking around and saying, why shouldn't we put a few of our marketing dollars into this person? You always run the risk of that person goes to a party and has a red solo cup because they're 18, 19, 20, 21 years of age and they shouldn't, or they get stupid and they do things that young college students end up doing. I think what will happen with boosters? What will happen with boosters that are like, yeah, you know, I think I'll have this person be a spokesperson for me. And by the way, the number that we agreed to will be 10 times that, 12 times that. I'm going to give them this to drive. I'm going to give them that to drive. There's certain parts of this that are going to open up in a can of worms, I think. And I believe, too, that there's going to be categories that they cannot endorse. Alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, from what I've seen in the early going on NIL. And again, this all starts Thursday. Will your favorite player, if you're a Chevy guy and he decides to endorse Ford, is he no longer going to be your favorite player? I've seen some concerning parts of NIL on the high school space. I've seen high school kids decide to put on Twitter, I am open for business and my recruiting with NIL starting on Thursday. You know, there's a part of high school sports that has become in the last couple of years through a bunch of reasons, agents, runners, clubs that aren't certified, coaches who have side businesses that are coaching, but they're also recruiting and they're also tied in with other schools, just things that are messy. NIL for a high school kid is going to get messy. If you're one of those high school parents, or you're a high school coach and you're watching me today and your son or your daughter goes on a recruiting visit or they're interested in a college and they don't have the conversation with them about NIL, then they're missing out. They're missing out. And if you don't have a plan for NIL, like I've noticed that both USC and UCLA just in the last 6 months have done a fabulous job of working with the LA Times on getting out their story on what they're doing with NIL. They are going to be very brazen about it, and they should be. They're in the entertainment capital of the world. So if it's getting a bit part in a movie, if it's being on billboards, if it's being somewhere in entertainment in Los Angeles, USC and UCLA are going to have an advantage. They just are. This is coming Thursday. And this is going to be the wild, wild west. There's going to be stories that I will tell you and we will write about that will just be crazy. You'll be like, this is really happening? There will be high school kids that will use NIL as the deciding factor as to where they go. Forget about football. Forget about, I can go make money for mom now. Single parent, go make money for mom now. Or crazy dad, I can go make money for crazy dad now. And he can go back and brag it up to all of his friends how his son has got NIL dollars going on. There's going to be kids that are going to endorse things that they have no interest in endorsing, but parents or runners or outside influences are going to say, hey, you need to go do this. So, and it's just a really interesting time in college sports. You know, the NCAA beatdown last week of 9-0 by the Supreme Court, I mean, 9-0 on the amateurism, that's coming. NIL's in place. It's a really interesting time in the college sports space. And one last thought, there's also the expansion of the college football playoff. There's going to be more teams expanding. I am still of the opinion that the bowl system needs to look at playing their games in September rather than January. You're thinking, I've lost my mind. No, I haven't. These players that say, yeah, we're opting out. And so you have bowls that don't have the attractive players. You have players that are saying, I don't want to get hurt before I go to the NFL combine. So you play the bowls at the front end of the season. And if you have a championship game, it runs through the Rose Bowl every year. Fiesta Bowl doesn't want to hear that, but I think that's where we're heading. So, you know, the last month of just basketball, this stuff's been happening. It's really interesting to me. All right, Fabiano, a little tidbit with Fabiano on the other side. Game number 6, Suns Clippers tomorrow night. There's not much left to say on it. Really isn't. I just got to get out there and figure out a way to push through. Stay with us. The pick that you say, everybody's going to be on this, buyer beware on this rookie class. Buyer beware.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we're talking fantasy football, yeah, it would be Travis Etienne, because he was the first or second, depending on who you looked at or read, running back in this class. It was Najee Harris and it was Etienne. And then he goes to Jacksonville, and that thing is going to be a mess potentially. So you love the name, and ADP data early on here, you know, less than a week out, has Etienne going 2 or 3 rounds ahead of James Robinson. And that might not be the case come the summer months. I don't know how to predict this backfield right now. I don't know what the roles are going to be, but I did hear Urban Meyer say that Travis Etienne would be a good third down back. Really? You're going to draft him in the first round as a third down back? I don't know if I see that. I had Fred Taylor on my show earlier in the week, and Fred thinks James Robinson will be the early down back and see goal line work, and Etienne will be the pass catching option and the complementary back, and maybe even more. He's certainly more than a complementary back, but he is not going to be a featured back. Let's put it that way. So in that case, is Etienne maybe more valuable than James Robinson in PPR? Possibly. Maybe they're going to line him up as a wide receiver. He's very versatile. It reminds me a lot of Jamaal Charles. But James Robinson was the RB7 last year in fantasy. He averaged 4.5 yards a carry. He's not going away. He was a good player. He is a good player. So that's going to be a committee. And by the way, Carlos Hyde is in that mix too. And Urban Meyer has the ties to Carlos Hyde from the Ohio State days. So it stinks from a fantasy perspective, but be careful with Travis Etienne. I really would be careful. I love the talent. I love the explosion. I love the versatility. I hate the landing spot.
Is your strategy still the same on rookie quarterbacks? Because you and I started this conversation 7-8 years ago. Things have changed, Michael. They're just going to put them out there now very early. Yeah. So is it still the same?
It doesn't mean everyone's going to succeed, though. I mean, yeah, Justin Herbert was the exception to the rule. And maybe it starts trending in that direction a little bit more, a lot of more pro-style offenses in college right now. But let's go through the top rookie quarterbacks. Right? Trevor Lawrence is going to get drafted in every single season of league, every one. He's a QB2, and he should be. I don't know that he's going to be Herbert as a rookie, but he should be pretty good. Zach Wilson is not going to get drafted in seasonal leagues. He's got the curse of the Jets quarterback and the first round pick curse of the gangrene. I don't love him as a fantasy option. He will be a dynasty pick. And then you look at Trey Lance. Well, Jimmy Garoppolo is still there. I would suggest that Lance will probably start plenty of games for the Niners next season, unless Garoppolo and the Niners are rolling. But Jimmy G is not durable. Well, I think there's enough there to think that Trey Lance is going to end up starting games for the Niners, and he's a very versatile player. Rushed for 1,100 yards in his last full season at North Dakota State. Had 28 touchdowns without a pick. That's pretty impressive. I don't care where you play and what the competition is. And then Justin Fields, like the Bears are saying, oh, well, you know, Andy Dalton's our QB1. Okay, yeah, it's like May 6th, right? So they didn't bring Justin Fields in to be a backup. Maybe Dalton starts week one. Maybe he doesn't start week two. Dalton's not going to be picked in seasonal. Justin Fields will be. And this kid could end up being the best quarterback the Chicago Bears have ever had from a fantasy perspective. Time will tell. Hopefully for Bears fans, that turns out to be what happens, because they've had a lot of bad quarterbacks in franchise history, right up there with the Jets. And then you talk about Mac Jones. Well, he ended up in a good long-term spot with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, right? I mean, Tom Brady was never a mobile dude. Even Drew Bledsoe, back to his Parcells days, and then with Belichick, not a mobile dude. So the offense would have to change if they bring Mac Jones in, because right now Cam Newton's very mobile and a guy that they're going to run a lot of RPOs with. You're not going to do that with Mac Jones. But long-term, I like Jones in that fit with what the Patriots did in the offseason, bringing in a couple of tight ends, some wide receivers. They brought in some weapons. But I don't know that Cam's going to lose that job unless he gets hurt or he's playing really poorly and the Patriots fall out of postseason contention. And overall, if we're just talking about redrafts, 10-team leagues, Lawrence is probably the only rookie quarterback to get picked in the middle to late rounds. And then I can see Fields and Lance coming off the board a little bit later on as QB teams. But once again, neither one is guaranteed to start in week one. And maybe neither one of those guys is actually in a prominent role for their respective teams until a quarter way through the season.